George Vesey witnessed the magnificence and the mischief of Diego Maradona. He was present when the U.S. women's team won it all in the Rose Bowl. The World Cups he has written about have surprised, delighted, and educated him, and he shares what he's learned in his new book, 8 World Cups, subtitled My Journey Through the Beauty and the Dark Side of Soccer. George Vesey joins me in the studio. Welcome back to Only a Game.
It's nice to be with you again.
You acknowledge that when you first started writing about the World Cup for the New York Times, you were not well prepared to do it. What made you feel that way?
Well, I couldn't follow the ball. I had no idea who was doing what. First of all, I didn't know the players well enough. I was at the World Cup watching Brazil and Argentina and Italy. But also, I just didn't know the game. The best football I'd seen, best soccer, was the NASL, you know, kind of falling apart in the fin de siècle end of the league. As good as those guys were, you know, old Beckenbauer, old Canalia, the ball just didn't move the way it did when Socrates passed to Falcao, who passed to Zico.
You've written that the World Cup, quote, offers a glimpse into the tortured soul of the host nation. It's a wonderful phrase. When and where did that first occur to you?
You know, certainly in Spain in 1982, I never saw the Spanish team play, but I was in Barcelona the night that Spain got knocked out of their group. They didn't get enough points, so they were out. Everything was quiet. The whole country, people were just stunned. And I've seen it in other places, Mexico, when Hugo Sanchez missed the penalty kick against Paraguay. The country just got quiet. And as soon as Mexico was eliminated, locals didn't care anymore. Their country was now just being rented out for a television studio.
As you point out in the chapter titled Blatter Scores an Own Goal, the protesters in Brazil have, quote, linked the corruption in their daily lives to their patrimony, their sport, the biggest sports event on the planet. How is that linking likely to manifest itself this summer?
Well, looking ahead in the short run, I think we're going to have some kind of protest ongoing. I don't think they're just going to sit back and say it's time for the World Cup. We're going to have a good time and everybody's going to party and watch the matches. I have never seen, I covered 8 World Cups. I will not be at this one, but I have covered 8 World Cups and have never seen a linking of football and FIFA with the social political problems in that country. You know, there's been stuff, but nobody's identified FIFA as the enemy. And this is Brazil, the home of 5 championships, the home of Jogo Bonito, where people are saying the problem is FIFA. The problem is football. We're being used by the multinationals. We're being used by FIFA. And we're being moved out. Our uncles and aunts and fathers and mothers are being moved out of their neighborhoods, and they can't get the buses, and the price has gone up because of this party. It's a very sophisticated, contemporary political reaction to what's happened. And I don't think it's not going to be here in the next month to come.
FIFA has perhaps also handed people a slogan. I mean, they said, we want FIFA-quality stadiums. Your stadiums aren't good enough. And so now people are saying, well, we want a FIFA-quality education. We want FIFA-quality health care. Depend on FIFA to hand them the ammunition.
Foot in mouth, own goal. That's blatter from the beginning. I mean, the man is a public spectacle. He's a buffoon. They don't get it that he's a clown. In this world of social media, you know, you're the Tahrir Square and the Taksim Square and all the squares of the world, Brazil has now become one huge square with social media. These people are very sharp, very sophisticated, and they're going to use the World Cup as it's never been used before as a teaching point for how countries get monopolized.
Among the elements of what the subtitle of your book refers to as the dark side of soccer is the greed of FIFA, the governing body of the sport. And as recently reported by the Times of London, FIFA's choice of Qatar as the site of the 2022 World Cup was apparently characterized by bribery. Do you think the decision to hold the event there will hold, or will they say, okay, we're going to have another election to see where that event's going to be?
It's a very tricky geopolitical decision to take the World Cup away unilaterally, to say, you know, you guys cheated. You can't have it. We're having another vote. We're going to give it to a first world country with stadiums already built. That would have severe ramifications. The people in Qatar wouldn't like it. And all you need to do is look at the front pages of the papers these days, these hours, and see that Qatar is our new best friend in this swap of people for our American soldier. It's in the news all the time. So Qatar is one thing, but beyond that is we don't want to be, the United States does not want to be the recipient of a World Cup taken away from an Islamic nation. That's for sure.
You didn't limit your book to the men's World Cups that you've attended. In terms of the impact on the host country, how has the women's World Cup differed from its male counterpart?
Well, thank you very much for noticing that. It was very important for me to do that. I certainly didn't have to sell the editors on it. I mean, they understood what I was saying and doing. But the American women, for reasons they got there early, Title IX, American women were in the forefront of women's soccer. We also benefited from one of the most charismatic and talented American teams. For them to be so good that they were, to go out and win a World Cup, win an Olympics, with people like Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy and Brianna Scurry, Michelle Akers. I mean, I could go on 10, 12, 15 names of players from that era. What a wonderful time that was. So to have that as an example, I mean, not that the American men play better or play harder because of the example of the women, but certainly the American public has a sense of how good those women were, how much they remain icons on the American scene to this day. I mean, Foudy's around. She's going to be broadcasting for ESPN. Mia Hamm is, like, you know, in a way a goddess. And there's Michelle Akers around, you know, the greatest female soccer player I've ever seen. And people forget about her in a way because she's so quiet and gentle. But on the field, she was vicious and huge.
I know you've seen enough World Cups to know that predicting winners is a very risky proposition. But hey, you're here, so I got to ask you, have you a favorite for this summer's extravaganza?
I do, and it's not Brazil. I think that the demonstrations, the tear gas and the noise wafting in over the barricades are going to affect the Brazilian players. But I'm going to quote the great English captain, Gary Lineker, who once was asked about his sport, and he said, you know, football's a simple sport. 22 players chase after the ball for 90 minutes, and in the end, Germany always wins. Now that's saying a lot. That's saying a lot for an English player to say that. But I'm picking Germany because they've had the head coach has been with them for 8 years, Joachim Löw. Most of the personnel is the same that's been coming along for 8 years, but they've replaced. There's still some young players. And I just think that Germany is strong enough on the field and mentally to come into an environment, put the blinkers on, say, we don't know what's happening outside the barricades. We're going to go play football, and I'm picking Germany.
George Vesey is the author of 8 World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. George, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Always a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Eton, offering the American Red Cross radio line a portable solar-powered radio with cell phone charger and flashlight for emergencies or travel, now at Radio Shack. And the Music Emporium, for 45 years offering collectible boutique and vintage acoustic guitars, themusicemporium.com. This is NPR.